Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Mostly Mets podcast. I am Rob Render. As my friend Casey Stern from MLB Network Radio would say, it's the solo expedition this week. Toby Hyde is on vacation, so he will not be with us. So instead of Toby, I'm bringing in a special guest. Not to say that Toby isn't special, but Nelson Figueroa of SNY will join me here in just a moment. We'll talk all about what's going on with the New York Mets. As of this week, it's not a whole lot different than last week, unfortunately. Lots and lots of negative stuff, at least as of right now, around the ball club. Before we get to Nelson, a quick programming note. To listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, and please rate and review our channel, and definitely check out this week's all-new episode of Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs, as SNY's Mets reporter sits down with Wayne Randazzo of 710 WOR to discuss the state of the Mets, pace of game issues, and the concept of bullpenning, which I know Wayne Randazzo loves. He tweets about it all the time. All right, time to get to my friend Nelson Figueroa. Of course, you know Nelson from SNY's Mets pregame show. He will be on Mets First Pitch again tonight, of course. Coverage begins at 9 p.m. Eastern time on SNY. The Mets are playing, of course, a series in San Francisco. You're not there, Nelson, but I know that you've kind of gotten the vibes from what's been going on as of the last few days on this road trip, and it seems like there's really just so much negativity around the ball club right now. Kind of take me inside the clubhouse. What do you think it's like right now for this team inside the clubhouse, especially since the last couple of weeks they've been losing to some pretty bad teams?
Yeah, this is a stretch of the season where they were supposed to be able to catch their breath, and usually, you know, if you're running on all cylinders, great. You have the last nine games, you figure they were going to at least go 6-3, and that would put them headed in the right direction, right in the thick of things, and it's been the absolute opposite. And I understand the injuries have piled up. You know, you lose Cespedes for 2 weeks. You lose Cabrera for 2 weeks. You know, those are two big important pieces of your defense and your offense. But, you know, as Terry said, these guys are getting called up, and they're major leaguers now, and they're going to have to perform, and you're just not seeing that type of major league performance on a nightly basis. I mean, this team takes one step forward and two step backwards, it seems, almost nightly.
What do you think it's like? I mean, you know, as a player, you've been on some teams that struggled at times. Is it tough in the clubhouse? Are you depressed? Are you sad? Are you nervous? What's the feeling like as a player?
I mean, I don't think that you're depressed, not by any means. It's not like you're out of it by, you know, 12 games and there's no shot and you're not playing for anything but, you know, hopefully a job, you know, keeping your job next year. But I think in this situation, you're looking at, you know, trying to pull some positives out of each victory. But the, you know, three victories in the last nine games is not very many positives to pull out. And then you look at all the different things of, you know, you're hoping that once Cespedes comes back, he's in the middle of that lineup, it's going to click for Bruce a little bit better. He's going to be able to do a little bit more out there, and you can lengthen the lineup when you have Cabrera back in there as well. And, you know, with his defense, of course, that's another big thing is surely missed. So for me, it's you have hope. You're only, you know, you're now sitting at four and a half out of that last wild card spot, and anything can happen. These are the dog days of August. We see within just last week, everybody that's in the wild card race had at least two guys go down to injury. So You kind of just have to tread water and try and stay, you know, with your head above and wait till these other guys come back. And there's got to be a push. If there's no push, then it's not meant to be. That's all there is to it. If they cannot find a way to win 6-7 games in a row, then it's not going to happen. There's nothing you can do. You can't will it to happen as a fan, as a player, as management. Right now, there have been so many injuries. Most teams that would have the DL that map out like the Mets did, their season would have been lost a long time ago. So it's good to see them still in the thick of it and having an opportunity to kind of make a push. Now they just have to actually put it together.
Yeah, you mentioned all those injuries. The Cardinals lose Matt Holliday for the season. We've seen the Marlins lose Giancarlo Stanton. Adam Conley is on the DL at least for a couple of weeks, and he's maybe been their second-best pitcher this year. Really not a maybe. He has been their second-best pitcher this year. So there are other teams going through injuries, but I've been one of those people that, especially on Twitter, has said that the injuries are a legitimate excuse for the Mets. I know a lot of people say, well, every other team's going through them, and they are, as we just pointed out, but it just feels like the Mets have gotten it much worse than everybody else. I mean, I don't see another team that compares. Do you think it's a legitimate excuse?
I do. I think there was an article written, it was about a week ago, the one that in the Wall Street Journal with the DL Mets versus the Mets team that is now,
right,
which team would win. And it's true. I mean, when you look at it's not just injuries and you lose guys all the time, but you're talking about big pieces. You're talking about Matt Harvey again. You're talking about David Wright again. The last time Matt Harvey and David Wright were out was, 2014. And, they put a little nice run on this season. They had the 79 wins, but, it wasn't enough to make a playoff run. And that's what you're looking at again. And it's not just them. It's Duda, a guy who can give you 30 home runs. Granderson is underperforming, one of his worst years of his career, if not the worst. Just left and right and center, there's just so many things going on. The injuries are a big, big issue. Not having Wheeler back when you're expecting, him to come back in the mix in whatever fashion that was going to be, that's a huge blow to the team. And that pitching depth that, it was such a surplus just a year ago, even in the beginning of this year. Now you're looking at and you get John Neese back and he's back to being your number five pitcher and you don't really know where to go from there.
Yeah. I'm curious, by the way, I don't know if you ever got any manager speeches. And I know Terry Collins has given a couple here over the last few weeks with all these struggles. Any idea of if that can help at all? I mean, when a manager comes in and either gives you a rah-rah speech or gives you a "you guys are terrible, pick it up" type speech where he flips tables. I mean, either way, do you think that motivates a team?
It works in every single movie I've ever watched. I think, Hoosiers is a great example. I think you look at all those movies and the speech is what turns it around, right? And I think that's why a manager waits to do it. They don't want to kind of do it so often that it's a numb feeling. Oh, here he goes talking again, telling us what we need to do. Guys get it. They know what they need to do. They know they're underperforming. They know they're not hitting with runners in scoring position. They know all these things.
Yeah.
You're not pointing out anything that they don't go to sleep at night thinking, man, I gotta be better at this. So I think he just wanted to show them that he cared, that he can't do anything on the field, but it's still hurting him. Like, he's emotionally invested in what's going on with each one of their performances. He knows how much hype was built up on this team. This team was World Series or bust. That was the two options. That's what, and no one in Mets land was settling for, oh, well, they had a nice season or they made a run. That they weren't going to be okay with that. It was either going to win the World Series on the 30th anniversary of the 86 team or nothing. And so right now, if it doesn't turn around, Terry needed to do something. He did it. He got it off his chest. Then there was a positive meeting. He said, hey, listen, we have a lot of good things in this clubhouse. We can do a lot of good things. There's a lot of great players. He kind of gets caught up in that. Look at the back of their bubblegum cards. But as you know, each year a player plays, the back of the bubblegum card kind of doesn't look that good. So for me, I loved it. I loved the emotional part of the game. We saw that with Wilmer Flores last year. You need to show that. You need to show that you care. Because if you know that the manager cares and he has really no influence on the outcome other than writing out the lineup and maybe making one change in the game.
Right.
You guys have to play the game. He puts it in your hands. It's your responsibility to make the most of the opportunities he's presenting and to go out there and win ball games. And he believes in you. That's all it's trying to do.
What percentage of this do you think falls on him in terms of the struggles?
I mean, not just him, but the whole coaching staff. When you look at some of the things, I mean, we've praised Dan Worthen from day one, and I think a big missing piece of this team was Bob Guerin working with the catchers. Dickie Scott's a great bench coach, but Dickie Scott wasn't a catcher. Doesn't understand about catching or the nuances of catching. So you can tell the base running against the Mets, team's going wild. Guys can't throw people out. They're not holding runners on. It's twofold. So you have to blame the pitching coach for not holding these guys accountable for holding runners on whatsoever. And for the catchers, their mechanics are terrible. They're not able to make strong enough throws to even keep guys at bay.
Yeah.
So to me, it's twofold with that. Terry's the figurehead looking over all of that. And when things are going well, you don't notice those little things. When you got a pitching staff with five aces, you don't care about those things because they're going to strike out the other two guys. That while that guy's still second and third, you hope he strikes out the other two guys that are on base.
Right.
So they're learning the hard way that it takes a lot more than just you know, hard velocity. They're missing their location with their two-strike pitches, Mats and Syndergaard. You know, they're showing some wear and tear of a long season as well. But I think, you know, you look at the peaks and valleys, you don't want so many peaks and valleys. I would rather have a little bit more consistency, like a Jacob deGrom.
Right.
Where he's quietly having an amazing season, but because the wins aren't there, no one will notice it.
Yeah. It's so, the strangest thing how quiet it has been for him, right? I mean, because he's been great.
He's – and what – as a player, all you ever hope to do is that when you're given an opportunity, you make the most of it. Jacob deGrom, since the moment he got up to the big leagues – remember, he was supposed to actually be in the bullpen and Montero was supposed to start.
Yep.
They flip-flopped that idea. DeGrom winds up starting. How does he make the most of it? Oh, I don't know. Rookie of the year, you get one shot to win that. He did it. He was awarded that. Then he comes in the next year, and he was quietly, nobody had to tell him, nobody had to bang the drum and say, hey, this guy's the ace of the staff. He was the ace of the staff last year. Hands down, got to the playoffs. His two performances in the first round, without those two performances, the Mets don't move on. You know, we keep talking about Murphy and everything. Murphy, without Jacob deGrom's two performances pitching in that first round, it wouldn't have even gone that far. Then you have, you know, he pitched all the way into the World Series. Just tremendous, tremendous, a quiet calm about him. He goes out there this year, and the Mets, you know, renew his salary. They don't reward him in any way, shape, or form because they don't technically have to. And so that kind of left a bitter taste in his mouth. His velocity is a little down. Everybody's complaining about Jacob deGrom. He, you know, goes home for the baby right when the season starts. And then all of a sudden he just kind of kicks it into that same Jacob deGrom gear. The velocity climbs. He's just steadily putting up zeros. And when you look at the last nine games, you know, he's one of, if not the best pitcher in baseball, and just does it each and every time out where you know you're going to get seven, not solid innings, but seven plus innings with maybe one run where he makes a mistake, and the Mets will score zero or one run while he's in there.
Yeah, he's just been that good. And I wonder if it changes their philosophy on him going forward. Obviously, we don't know if they planned on extending him, giving him a new contract at any point. They don't have to for a number of years still. He hasn't even gotten arbitration yet. But and by the time he's out of arbitration, he'll be in his low 30s, I think between 31 and 32 or 32 and 33. It's somewhere in there. So I just wonder if maybe they think it's still not worth giving him an extra contract. But he's really earned it, hasn't he, at this point?
That to me is the biggest thing. It's an issue of what has he done to earn a raise of such. If you're going to play that game of pencil pushing in certain areas, when you look at what Jacob deGrom has done, and like a lot of teams usually go and they sign that young kid to a low contract, you know, with big years to buy out a couple of those free agency years and things like that. I get it. I understand he's going to be 31 when he becomes a free agent, you know, and you don't want to have to pay him until then. But you have to reward excellence. I'm sorry. I just don't see why you would just sit back. And I'm not saying break the bank and overpay for it, but you went out and paid Lagares, you know, $7 million a year for the next 5 years.
Yep.
You're telling me you can't make something. He's a new father. He wants some kind of – he's had Tommy John already. Every pitcher knows this. This is the reality. Every pitcher knows they're one pitch away from their career being over. Some kind of – guarantee that, hey, you know what, I'm being rewarded for my efforts and for everything I've accomplished. He even said, I think him and his agent said that they would take, you know, a lower hometown, you know, discount just to get those years in. And I don't see him being someone that's going to sit around and want to break the bank. The reality of it is he can go the next 3 years without having to get a really big boost other than, you know, winning an arbitration. But you have to put some value on what he's done and that quiet calm that he brings to your rotation. With all the drama you have with everybody else in that rotation, this guy is as rock solid as it gets.
Yeah, sometimes it's better just to pay a little more and make the player feel good about everything, and then you know you're going to get even better performance potentially. I want to ask you about Michael Conforto. I don't think I've had the chance to do this since he went back down to the minor leagues. He went 4-for-4 again last night, and again, we're just talking about a couple of performances in a row where he's been really good down there, and both times that they've demoted him, he's performed exceptionally well at the AAA level. Yeah, it's the PCL. Yeah, a lot of guys hit down there, but at least nice to see that he's making solid contact. He's hitting the ball over the fence. He's doing things that he's supposed to do at that level. What do you think the Mets should do with him now going forward? Is this a situation where they wait until September to get him back up again? They know, as you mentioned earlier, that they are going to get Cespedes back probably by Friday. So he'll be back on the roster. Maybe it's a question of where are you going to play him if you bring him back. What do you think the Mets should do with Conforto?
Well, I understand, you know, Conforto was struggling. They wanted to shake it up and whatnot. But when you have Ty Kelly as your starting left fielder, no disrespect to Ty Kelly, but Michael Conforto is, you know, somebody that we feel is going to be a cornerstone type player for this organization. He came up here with that kind of swing. And it's not just, yeah, everybody wants to look at the results. They want to look at the results, but what there's twofold to it. There's the physical, there's the mental side of it. When everybody was tooting his horn and he was batting 380 after April, and he was the next, you know, we started putting him up against Harper and Trout and the numbers after 77 games and all that. Yeah, that's it. It was over, said, and done. That was after 77 games. We also said that he hasn't hit his first major slump. And we showed all those guys, Harper, Trout, after that first major slump, how they were able to bounce back and still hit a consistent, you know, around 280, which is great for major league players now. So somebody like Conforto, first of all, you handicap him because you tell him, well, we're not going to let you face left-handers. He has 14 at-bats last year against left-handers. Now all of a sudden it's in his head that he can't hit left-handers. Meanwhile, he's hit left-handers his whole career, down in the minors, college, everything else.
Yeah.
So you build in a handicap there that it's okay, you're not supposed to hit left-handers. Conforto, I don't think he's designed like that. I think he wants to prove everybody wrong. So what happens when you try to prove everybody wrong? You start doing a little bit too much. It got him out of sync. It got him out of rhythm. Then the rest of the time he was trying to play catch-up on those slumps. Now my 0 for 10s. Instead of going, you know, 0 for 8 and then getting a knock, this guy is going 0 for 12, 1 for 17. You know, you're starting to look at the 20 at-bats in a row since he's hit a ball hard kind of thing. That's not what Michael Conforto came up as. He came up as a line drive guy, a guy who can go gap to gap with that very impressive opposite field power. But I still needed to see a guy that was putting hard swings on the ball where that hard contact rate. He was one of the top five in the major leagues of hard contact rate when everything was going well. And then he lost that. And it happens. He went down. He, you know, the PCL. Again, you bat 340 in the PCL. Everybody, you know, sees, oh, wow, 340. But I said the same thing about last night. He's had 8 hits in his last 2 games. Now, of those 8 hits, I haven't seen the reports. I need to know how many of them were hit on the nose, how many of them were line drives, how many of them were hard hit balls. You know, because in the PCL, you're going to play no doubles defense most of the time. You get a lot of bloopers. So a guy with a big swing, a lot of bloop hits. The surface is hard because it's, you know, a lot of higher elevation, desert-type places as well where you hit the ball on the ground and get those choppers. So I need to see 8 for 8. You know, he had 8 hits in the last 2 days. I want to know 6 of them were on the screws.
Yeah.
That tells me he's locked in. That tells me he's getting that, and that's that confidence. You have that confidence, you come back up to the big leagues, but he has to play. He came back up, and he was playing sporadically, and then he would have a game where he'd hit the home run, and everybody's like, well, why don't we have this guy in here every day? Well, it's because the day that they did give him the play, he struck out 3 times and, you know, looked terrible. So if you're going to let him play, you're going to have to let him play. I think I'd like what he can bring to the table, and if he's feeling good and it's a positive – I think when Cespedes comes back, I think, you know, you can do what you want with Ruggiano and then have Conforto come back up and at least have a better opportunity with that. Because Granderson right now at the plate does not look like anything much more than a solo shot, you know, when the game doesn't matter. That's what we're seeing out of Granderson. So,
basically,
I'd take my chance with Conforto.
You'd play Conforto in right field then, essentially, down the stretch.
I think that's really which way you would go. If you're not going to play him in center field, I really don't, because Diaz had a great month of July, but really fizzled out in August. You know, he had the 3-0 triple that everybody's still raving about.
Right.
And he plays your best defense in center field. You know, you like that aspect of it. So if that's the case, you put Conforto in right field. I mean, I think you have to have Conforto in the lineup for the foreseeable future if you're going to really make a push, because he can give you those 3-4 hit games. Now they have to translate into the major leagues. 2 hit game. That's what I'm looking for. I want more 2 hit, 3 hit. I don't want the occasional solo home run where, again, when it doesn't matter, when it's almost like nobody's watching, kind of like Granderson's last night. Everybody already turned off the TV, and they wake up, oh, Granderson hit a home run.
Yeah, so when it was 12, 13 to 4 or something, yeah.
Yeah, but when he came up with twice with guys in scoring position, he did the same thing he's been doing, striking out.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's been terrible with runners in scoring position all season long. All right, one last one for you. We talked about the Mets needing to make a run here. As you said, the Mets are 4 out of that second wild card. You've got a fairly hot Cardinals and Pirates teams in front of them. They've each won 4 in a row. The Cardinals right now own that second wild card. The Pirates are 1 back. The Marlins are in between at 2 games behind. We mentioned they've lost Giancarlo Stanton and Adam Conley. The Mets are going to get Cespedes back. They're going to get Cabrera back. So they are going to get a little healthier over the next couple of days. Do you see them legitimately making a run at this, making that 6 or 7 game stretch, or putting together the 6 or 7 game stretch that you talked about that it's going to take to get them to leapfrog those teams? Do they have it in them?
I do think they have it in them. I do in my heart of hearts think they have it in them, and in my head of heads, because I have to think as an analyst, not as a fan. It's very difficult for me to see a team that has this many professional, you know, you keep, that's Terry's word, professional ball players, and not be able to string together more than 2 in a row. And they only did that one time so far here in the second half. With the pitching staff that they have, with the bullpen that they have, there's no way that it doesn't compute. When you put in the numbers and you look at it even on paper and you say all it takes is putting a nice string together. And I think they have it there. I think they have the ability to do it. Now, hopefully Cespedes comes back into that clubhouse and re-energizes that team, take advantage of a team that's down like San Francisco right now, because I pinpointed this part on the calendar. It was either going to go one way or another. It wasn't going to be able to tread water. They weren't going to come out of this thing, you know, sitting around. You can't meander at 500 in this part of the calendar and hope to make the playoffs. So they're going to have to put that push on here. They did it last year. Remember when they went to the West Coast and they had their way with L.A.
They
had their way with San Francisco, and then they swept Arizona and that 10-game road trip.
Oh, absolutely. That where everyone thought trip they were going to be done.
That was it. Everybody was like, oh, that's the beginning of the end. Get ready. The season's going down. And what did they do? They swept L.A. They took 2 out of 3 from San Francisco, and then they swept the D-backs at home, and all of a sudden everybody's like, wow, maybe this team can compete. I think the same thing's got to happen. They got to go into San Francisco. If they can take 3 out of 4, they're in a very nice position. That means, you know, they'll have that momentum. They'll have that, hopefully, that swagger back in that clubhouse. Reyes is giving them that little bit of lift, too. You see what his speed is doing, helping them score some runs. I think once you get all those pieces back together, I think they're going to push, make a nice little push.
No question about it. Huge series starts tonight. They're all huge, I guess, from now on in. The Mets at 500 playing a struggling Giants team. Nelson Figueroa, of course, you can catch, as always, on Mets First Pitch tonight, beginning at 9 p.m. East Coast time on SNY before the Mets and Giants open up their series in San Francisco. Nelson, thanks again, my friend. It's great to catch up with you.
Anytime, Rob. You got it.
That's my first time talking to Nelson Figueroa since spring training, and I remember we were sitting in the bowl in Port St. Lucie as the Mets were playing their intra-squad game right at the end of the workout portion of spring training before they get into the game action. And we were sitting there and we were breaking down the roster, and I think both of us, to a man, thought this team, there's just no way that they can miss the playoffs this year. The way that this team is put together, all the pitching that they have, the offense at that point was completely healthy. David Wright, we assumed, was going to give them somewhere near 100 games, and Lucas Duda would never get hurt, not like he has this year. And we thought this team is definitely meant for the playoffs. And now we're at a point with all the injuries that we've seen and the pitching going through its issues, and obviously they're battling through some injuries in that staff too, that this Mets team is going to have to overcome some major challenges, I think, more than most, if not any other team is experiencing this year. And granted, I'm not trying to make excuses for them. I don't want this to come across as an episode where we're saying the injuries have been the reason that they're in this position, but I definitely think it's a huge factor, if nothing else. So we'll see. We'll see. They're going to get Cespedes back. They're going to get Cabrera back. Those are two huge bats for the middle of their lineup. We'll see if Cespedes, and as Nelson said, gels a little bit now with Jay Bruce, and that gets Jay going in the middle of that Met lineup. And maybe the Mets can turn things around as they start this big series in San Francisco tonight. Make sure to check it out on SMY. Before we get going, make sure to listen to all of SMY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SMY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. That's the SMY.TV audio network. And please rate and review our channel. Thanks again to Nelson Figueroa of SMY for joining us. Thanks to the guys back in the studio for all the help. As always, I am Rob Renner. We'll see you next week on the Mostly Mets podcast.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SMY.TV audio network.